This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
All right, we now move on to a very different topic, shared services. Again, we've sort of had a few allusions to that from earlier in the day, the importance, you know, for universities to look closely at cutting their costs as well as at the same time income generation. So shared services is clearly something that's very much on the agenda. Let me introduce to you our panel. They are Professor Malcolm Gillies, Chair of London Higher and also Vice-Chancellor of London Metropolitan University and formerly Vice-Chancellor of City University. Andy Westwood, who is Chief Executive of Guild HE. Probably Guild HE doesn't need much introduction to you, but it has 32 members across a diverse spectrum, including specialist vocational institutions, university colleges, new universities, and further education colleges. And he's also a former special advisor to ministers in the Department for Innovation, Universities and Skills. And Chris Cobb, who is Pro Vice Chancellor at Roehampton University and was formerly at the London School of Economics, where he was Director of Business Systems and Services. So each from sort of different backgrounds, which is great. So we've got a good spread here. Once again, they've all been given a brief to give us an introductory few minutes, and then we'll be over to you for questions. If you don't mind, I'm just going to go in the order I've just announced to you, if that's okay. So we'll begin with Malcolm Gillies. Thank you.
Good. Thank you very much. I'd like to talk about some of the initiatives of London Higher for the next few minutes. In fact, London Higher, which has engagements with all of the publicly funded universities in London, is a success story of a shared service founded about 10 years ago. Some of the areas that we've been developing shared services in the last 24 months are London Medicine, taking over that role from the University of London, a workforce development unit, Access HE, where we're taking over most of the work of AIM Higher that's been operating in London to this point, and also shared services initiatives. What we're trying to do in London Higher is, in fact, to meet the needs of our members, but also, as they wish, to provide forums in which they can explore their ideas about a whole range of shared services. We commissioned Grant Thornton to come up with a pretty comprehensive review towards the end of last year, looking at the interest, the appetite for shared services amongst HEIs, and then moving on into this year, looking at indeed who were the business providers and what did they have to offer. Some of you may have heard an initial presentation I gave about 6 months ago in one of these forums. Can I just say that the report is given there? It's the one raise and save in the box. So I just wanted to say about it that one of the issues that's emerged is that heads of institutions seem to have much more appetite than finance directors, who seem a pretty mean and lonely bunch. So if you're in that category, please emulate your Vice-Chancellor. Wanted to say that one of the issues which is here is that issues of outsourcing, issues of joint partnerships and membership organisations, especially for shared services, seem to feature at about the same percentage in people's minds, and then a very small percentage, just 5% there in blue, who are actually looking at joint ventures. This is the most interesting slide, however, because it's quite clear that British universities at the moment are not so much interested in shared services as some radical way of cost-cutting to stave off insolvency, but they're more interested in how you improve on quality and how you share risk. And then there is the issue, indeed, of how you can be containing costs. So with that kind of a background, with a particular emphasis on how to do things better, the Grant Thornton survey went out and said, well, what appetite do you have in the next few years to be developing various shared services? And the statistics you'll notice here are quite high, getting up towards over 50% for some of the front runners. It's worth just saying, to put this slide in context, that at the moment we can say that the most popular areas for shared services are audit and compliance, where in our survey we were finding over 40% of the London institutions already have some shared service in audit, and indeed procurement, where they either did or were developing that, and over 40% have that, many of them through the London University's procurement organisation. If we look at the slide that's up here, however, just for a moment, you'll see that there are in fact five categories determined by the length of the lines, and as this slide's a little small, let me just elaborate it for a moment. Firstly, you have HR training, procurement, finance and ICT, being big areas for development of shared services in the next few years, ICT not being so strong in recent times, nor HR training, even if procurement and finance in the form of payroll may have been. You then have another category with facilities management down here to research management and support, with strong interest around the 40% area. Research management already having quite a high degree of shared service across similar institutions. Then move into a third category, which is from professional services, library services, student accommodation, recognising there that library services is already one of the ones where there is a lot of involvement and there's always been a good sense of collaboration, even if not formal sharing of services. Fourth category, as we draw in a little bit more, areas of academic estate going up towards health and safety. Audit and compliance, not so much appetite now because already nearly half the institutions have it. And the ones, well, hey, you could have expected it, teaching and learning and research didn't really feature very high at all because people felt these were actually the things that defined your brand above all. If you start to share your bloodlines, you may indeed catch a cold.
Yeah.
So that's, I think, a very interesting slide. Now, just to finish up, to say just a couple of things about the private sector. The surveys we've been doing more recently this year show that everyone who's been looking at this area is automatically using the private sector to help them with the development. They're using consultants hugely to scope out what they want to do and to get it set up. And then as they go into the potential suppliers, they're largely looking at commercial suppliers rather than developing their own new shared vehicle. And so that is interesting to see that there doesn't seem to be that much appetite for a non-private sector way of moving forward with shared services. Just to say something on this last slide about what London Hire would hope to do. As a representative body with still very good reach across all of our members and now expanding out to partners, many of you here, British universities with campuses in London, there are 15 of you, overseas universities operating in London, answer to one of the questions earlier is over 20 overseas universities now operating with some kind of actual course provision in London, for-profits, not-for-profits, internationals. It's a big world in London. In fact, over 700 bodies that are offering some form of post-secondary education. So we're opening up to some of those partners because we believe this is the time when we do need to interact with all the sectors if we're truly going to represent higher education in London. So we see our role as bringing HEIs, members and partners together, working with the private sector and starting small to give people time to develop their appetite. And to do that, we've founded a trading company, which is called Higher Education Connected Limited, to promote and develop collaborations between providers of HE and other bodies and any other commercial activities deemed appropriate. Now, that must have been written by a private sector lawyer, mustn't it? Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Malcolm. Andy Westwood.
Thank you. Let me try and phrase it in a slightly different way. I think I had my questions set me before I came, and I kind of looked at them just as I was walking in. So I've prepared thoroughly, as you can expect. The first one was a question about the willingness in HE to consider changes to the way services are delivered. And I think kind of what Malcolm's just said sort of teased this up quite nicely, really, which is that it's only really the term shared service that's strange to us. You know, universities and colleges and whether that's FE or HE or private or public, have been doing this for a very long time. And in HE, particularly across the sector, we are covered with organisations that share expertise and deliver things on behalf of the collective rather than necessarily the individual. And it doesn't take a lot of imagination to start listing every organisation from UCAS to JISC and millions in between to realise that that's true. I think alongside that, and I think kind of, in recent years, there's been a lot more appetite to do smaller, much more specific collaborations and sharing of activity across very, very precise areas. And just to give you a couple of examples close to home, we host a research consortium for a bunch of our members that, as they're small but specialist, have a load of research capacity, but not necessarily the capacity to kind of join things up off of training. And other services that underpin that. We also share kind of, finance offices with universities the University of Plymouth. We share media offices across members too. And I think there are kind of lots of those sort of more bespoke collaborations. So in a sense, I think kind of part of the issue here is not one of, is the sector ready for shared services? It's does the sector recognise that title as something that actually kind of sits with what it does and how it's been thinking for a very long time. I think the more interesting one is about culture shift. What is it about this term that actually kind of gets people thinking in strange ways? And I think it's quite interesting because there's no doubt that because of that desire that Malcolm talked about for people to cut costs and rethink their strategies very, very significantly over the next months and years, there's a fear that not what that represents between those institutions, but what others will think of it. So, you know, if two or three vice-chancellors of institutions get together in a room, people assume either they're talking about a merger, or if there's more than two or three, it might be a new mission group. And of course, both of those things might be true. But the perception of the rest of the sector of what you might be up to in a strategic shift, I think, is probably more of a cultural issue than actually the conversations that are taking place between organisations. Because my sense is that this is a sector that's very happy to pool resource, very keen to cut costs, very able to move into very interesting and kind of bespoke new organisational forms, whether they be joint venture companies between public sector organisations, between public and private, between HE and FE, and many other forms besides. So I think the kind of the real cultural shift is kind of is at what point do those institutions that are prepared to do that kind of allow themselves to be able to talk about it publicly and not set hairs running at a million miles an hour. And of course, at the moment, it's very difficult not to do that in higher education. And yesterday was just another example of a rabbit flying at a very high pace around the room several times. So yes. at that stage, I'll
And of course, the idea of several vice-chancellors meeting together in a room, they certainly wouldn't be discussing fee levels, would they? Chris Cobbs.
No. Not anymore.
Thank you. I think I'd like to echo what my other panel members have said about definition of terms, because I think that goes to the crux of some of the barriers about shared services. It's a term that's used in many different ways. Is it outsourcing? Is it sharing collaboratively between different institutions? Or is it actually just centralisation within one institution, which is another way in which it's used? But I'd like to try and differentiate them in a different way, and that's that I think there are two types. There are the type that Malcolm's already identified, which are fairly widespread already, which are about critical mass, talking about audit, about health and safety, about those areas where one institution can't really justify having a large team, but one person is highly risky due to absence or a narrow experience. So coming together in that area actually builds capacity. It's a quality-based shared service, and there are many examples of that around the country. The other type of shared service is one about economy of scale, and I think that's the one that the government is beating us over the head about. They would like us to come together in order to save costs. And yes, there are some very good examples about that. We've mentioned a few of them, UCAS, JANET, and so on, some very large national ones. But the ones that where we're all looking more intently are a bit more elusive. And it's interesting that the Grant Thornton report was describing things like ICT and HR and so forth. And there have been a number of different initiatives in the past. A few years ago, Liverpool John Moores had PA Consulting come in and do an analysis of what areas they might share. The Bloomsbury Group have gone through this similarly. But it also always gets stuck at that very high level. It's a very difficult thing to understand, and it is turkeys and Christmas a lot of the times. So I think that the key thing for me is that devil's in the detail, and it's not surprising that you've got a lot of uniform thought at a vice-chancellor level, and it's interesting that it actually breaks down the next tier down at FD level, because I would have anticipated it breaking down a bit further as people actually understand the problem. And what I would suggest is that rather than talk about it at that level, we've got to talk about it at a process level and identify strategically rather than opportunistically those processes which are transactional in nature rather than those that are, have these sort of complications about decision support or control or quality, which is where the shared services conversation kind of breaks down. I'd also like to dispel a couple of myths about some of the barriers as well. The VAT barrier keeps on coming up as one of the reasons why we shouldn't enter into shared services. And there is European legislation, directives I should say, but they haven't been incorporated into UK law yet. We do anticipate that coming along down the line. But even when that does come down the line, that will only be about collaboration between institutions, VAT-exempt institutions. It won't cover outsourcing. So you'll still have that question about VAT and can you make sufficient savings to warrant paying 20% VAT? And I think that in answer to that, you've got to look at what the cost base are. We already pay VAT on all of our non-staff costs. All of our equipment, all of our licences, all of our consultancies, Grant Thornton, PA, KPMG, Ernst & Young, all the people that are giving us advice here, we're paying VAT on already. The area we don't pay VAT on is in staff, and in recent surveys, the Junches survey that was published a couple of months ago, it showed that our staff costs were considerably higher than other public sector organisations as well as the private sector. Almost, it's in the mid-30s. 30% higher. So if you look at it in that context, then I don't think that VAT continues to be a very solid argument. The other barrier that's thrown up is that you don't outsource a problem. Why let someone do this on your behalf when you could actually make that efficiency yourself and then outsource an efficient process? And I think that's a very good and very important aspect that we've got to consider. The key to me there is that if you look around strategic plans across universities across the country, I can't think of a single one that isn't going through an efficiency plan. And in terms of anticipated savings and so forth through efficiencies, just in the last year or so, as we've all been making cuts, there have been a considerable number of efficiencies already made. So perhaps now is a better time to look at alternative methods. And I think the last one is cultural, and Andy's already referred to it about this being nothing new. We have been doing this for years already, and I think that the only thing that is different about this is we're looking at it more strategically rather than opportunistically, and that's the only difference, I think.
Okay, well, thank you very much. I mean, it seems to be consensus that shared services is something that has been happening already. The sector is ready for it. They don't always want to necessarily call it shared services, but perhaps not yet for all functions. And I thought it was interesting highlighting teaching and research as the ones where there seemed to be the sort of least enthusiasm for it. So it's over to you really for questions or comments. I don't know whether any particular views there about particular areas that you think are more or less appropriate for sharing services or for collaborating, or indeed any other issue, whether it's VAT or whatever else. So again, we've got the roving microphones, and I'm sure if I wait long enough, somebody will come up with a question, because I've got mine own as well, ready, of course, just in case. Okay. Oh, yeah, thank you. I was about to crack, and there were questions in the back. Thank you very much.
Neil Latham from Kingston University. I note the enthusiasm of the presenters, and indeed myself, I'm in conversation with Chris Cobb of Roehampton, where we're looking at opportunities. And indeed some of them exist, but I think we shouldn't underestimate the difficulties and challenges, even at relatively modest levels of making this happen, looking at the balance of risk, cost and quality that Malcolm Gillies quite rightly pointed out. There are some other strategic commercial models used in industries, such as that of BA and Iberia, where you have a holding company with two outward-facing parts of the organisation that look as if they are different. And I just would be interested in the panel's observations on that sort of model in our sector, whether it is a non-starter or does have some possibilities. And also, perhaps as a second question, perhaps we're all in this room aware of the experience of the Research Council in their attempt and experience of a shared service organisation. And if there are any observations that panel members could make on that experience, I'd also be grateful.
Okay, thank you. Question to two parts there. Malcolm, BA, Iberia model, does it work for universities?
Well, I don't fly either of them because I think they're too expensive and they have too many strikes. I think the most important thing in that would be to work out what the real advantage was. I mean, why you had a British or a Spanish kind of interest which encouraged you to have it. Can't see why that wouldn't be the case. And indeed, with many of the current people who do provide shared services, they do have many different names. They are using the same actual facilities and often the same people. So I think it's there already, but it's not quite as overt as BA and Iberia.
And it wouldn't matter if those institutions were charging different levels of fees, or would it?
Well, I think we've got different levels of fees being charged within individual institutions now in Britain. So I think that that's a much bigger question for us to work out. Internal competition is rife at the moment since the fee levels were put into offer a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah. OK, thank you. Andy?
I think the holding company is a good analogy, actually. I think it's a... it's an example of... that's quite frightening.
Something about your magnetic personality.
Yeah, it must be that. I think it's a good example of kind of how organisational forms are going to be quite hard to track. In a sense, I think the kind of... the worst thing about the conversation about form and regulation in the context of kind of current changes and the forthcoming white paper are that all institutions are going to stay the same in some way, including the private sector, and try and kind of compete in particular ways and structure themselves in ways that they have done in the past. And I think the holding company is one kind of example. A joint venture company is another that we've already heard about. And I think the holding company model already exists, actually. I think there are one or two already where an HE and FE institutions are sharing governing bodies. That feels quite a lot like a holding company to me. Sadly, not quite as exotic as kind of UK and Spain, but kind of nonetheless, the model applies. I think kind of the Research Council example is quite interesting, because I think what that flags up is that, you know, here are a bunch of institutions located in a, you know, very close proximity. If you don't know it, next to the station in Swindon. They all look the same, they all do the same things, but they clearly didn't get on as well as they thought they did. And it shows that actually, if you are going to do this stuff, it matters who you're working with and whether you trust them. And I think quite often that's as likely to happen in very different organisations, like the holding company or the HE and FE model, and probably even more likely than it is to happen in institutions that outwardly look very similar and do very similar things, because actually the trust is harder. It's harder to kind of develop amongst those that are likely to be more overtly competitive in different ways.
And Chris, so Roehampton, just down the road from Kingston.
Yes,
you know,
yes. Neil and I.
Should we read anything into this?
Well, I don't think you can at the moment, but let me. I think it's a very good point, Neil. If you look at the private sector, you would definitely get market differentiation. Another example is McDonald's and Pret a Manger. You know, they're completely different products, exactly the same company. And I think that if we've got private,
I didn't realise that. Gosh.
You've got private companies.
Well, I'm going to Pret a Manger now, anyway.
Private universities coming to the UK, I'm sure they will differentiate themselves and present themselves differently. But that, I think, is a very different proposition to what I think Neil is suggesting here. And I would say that if two existing universities, state institutions, were to come together, it would have to be far more than because of an efficiency through a shared service. It would have to be because there's a strength in collaboration or a meeting of minds in some way. And what I think we're talking about there is a merger, and there have been some very successful mergers in the past few years. There's also been some attempted mergers that haven't gone so well, or actually didn't happen at all. So I think that if we were looking at it in that context, then I think there would have to be something more to it. There's a definite cultural thing here that it can't just be because of a shared administration. I go back to my other point. There are strategically important aspects of the administration about the decision-making and the forward-looking face of the institution that you would want to protect if the collaborating institution were in any way seen as a competitor. That's different from sharing car production or post or any of the other things that are more transactional.
Malcolm, you wanted to come back on to it.
Yes, there's a very interesting result coming out of the Grant Thornton survey that shows that size really does matter. And so it isn't a matter of Roehampton and Kingston coming together so much, because they're fairly large institutions, but it's many of those smaller institutions, in fact the majority in London, quite specialised in many cases, which do come together. So something like Trinity Laban coming together with Ravensbourne, or a very good example we have of Guildhall School of Music and Drama coming together with the City of London Corporation, which is in a way a kind of parent anyway. But they're interesting because the smaller bodies literally don't have it. I think you share a procurement officer now with Surrey. Many of the smaller organisations can't really even afford to have a procurement officer, so they're looking automatically outwards to get a better efficiency. So I think size is going to matter a lot here, and we need to look to the smaller bodies to be the ones who are the keenest to do this, and also have some of the sharpest economic challenges right now.
And building on that, I mean, we heard a number of times today that we may see more stratification, more institutions specialising. Is that going to make it easier for them, therefore, to share services if they've got a more of a niche market, which is different from somebody else nearby to them, rather than offering very similar courses? Andy?
Markets tend to suggest that. Whether kind of a market in HE, well, whether it's a market in HE is another matter, but whether a market in HE lends itself to that is will be interesting to see. 5 or 10 years ago, I was working on FE policy in the Treasury, and they were desperate to create loads of specialists rather than general providers. It didn't happen, but that wasn't the first time that a Treasury plan bit the dust. But I think kind of the point about organisations like Ravensbourne, which is a Guild HE member, is a good one. I think they are very relaxed about collaboration and outsourcing, partly because of their size, but partly because they've gone through this, you know, enormous change where they've kind of, you know, changed from kind of suburban art institutions to this kind of very different, future-looking kind of networked organisation, if you don't know it, next to the O2. And, you know, and it's all about what it doesn't have to do within the institution so that what it really does have to do can be done very well. And I think, so I think kind of Malcolm's point about kind of what are the things you really want to collaborate on and what are the things you don't, I think that's probably a very good example. Time will tell whether small and specialist is... makes you more likely to be the subject of mergers rather than kind of strategic collaborations. My sense is that they're pretty fleet of foot. Right. So it isn't always the pressing question that it might be.
Chris, any thought on that? Do you think that is one of the directions which we'll be moving as a result of the new fees regime?
Well, it's difficult to tell. I think we're all trying to predict whether or not student numbers are going to increase or decrease, particularly after the sort of the kite flying that happened yesterday. I think that what's happening with fees isn't going to have as large an impact on this as a lot of people think. The mergers aren't going to happen because of the fee increases. I do think there will be a distillation of the market. I think there probably will be some greater specialisation. I do note the strategy at London Met and about the consolidation. I think the opposite of that is that there will be a whole lot of people that are already specialists in the subjects that London Met are cutting that will want to enhance that and make themselves different. It goes back to market differentiation and being good and well-renowned and a great brand with what you do, and try not to be all things to all people, although for some institutions that is exactly their market.
Okay, thank you very much. Any final questions? This? Yes, right in the middle there. Thank you.
Thank you. Reagan Hiles, a Moshi, the Student Services Organisation. Quite taken with some of the discussions about niche provision and also the comment earlier about you don't outsource a problem. I think much of the fear that comes from people on the ground in the sector when they hear the phrase shared services is about taking their professionalism away and making their roles meaningless. Is that the case, or is this a real opportunity to actually advance the sector and perhaps make professionalism even more embedded?
Okay. Malcolm, do you want to have a go at that?
I think that shared services are a really good way to advance the sector. I'm not sure they're a good way to advance the interests of particular bodies of staff in particular institutions, because the end result of the shared service discussion could be that you shouldn't have any staff now employed in that area, and indeed you get another institution to do it, as I think you now do in procurement. That obviously creates discontinuity in people's lives. It can create demoralisation. It could be very good to do financially, or it could turn out simply to buy in someone else's problem. So I think for the sector viewpoint, yes, greater efficiencies would be good and help to put more pence in the pound to the student and to our research. But the difficulty is that for any particular body of staff, it can create a lot of insecurity, and it does have the turkeys and Christmas syndrome about it all too easily.
Mm. And presumably the whole uncertainty about if the discussion is going on, that's very unsettling for staff.
I think it's very difficult to have frank and open conversations because of exactly that, the fear factor and how it can set a downward spiral going. What I would say is that I agree with Malcolm. This does provide an opportunity for the sector and as an institutional level as well. And I think that one of the key things is about standards and quality. If you start looking at opportunities from shared services, you have to start defining more clearly what it is that you do. And the clarity of thought in that process is a very developmental process in itself. If you were doing an outsourced contract, you would have to define the service levels. And then you'd have to question yourself, well, have we got those service levels at the moment? The process itself, I think, is a very exacting one and a very developmental one.
Has anyone suggested sharing vice-chancellors?
It's interesting. For a while, there was one more vice-chancellor than there was institution in London. But eventually they worked that one out. Now, at the moment, it doesn't seem to be quite as popular. But when you look at it, I mean, some of us do think we could probably expand our horizons a bit, you know.
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay, any final points? Thank you for your questions. Let me just make a few announcements about the master classes that follow shortly after this. Just to say, refreshments will be served in each of the master classes. So those are in this room, they'll be at the back of this room. The others will be in the separate rooms. Let me just run through them quickly so you know where you're going. If you're going to the strategy and positioning through marketing and communications, then that is in the Bedford Suite 4 on the lower ground floor. If you're going to the Workforce Planning Masterclass, that is in Bedford Suite 2, also on the lower ground floor. If you're going to Sustaining International Developments, that is in here, the Queen Mary Hall. And if you're going to Innovations in Bursary Management, then that is in the Carnegie Suite on the ground floor. The masterclasses will run until 5 o'clock. The conference will end at that point. If I could just give you a quick reminder, one last reminder about the evaluation forms. If you could fill those in and hand those in at the registration desk, that would be really helpful. Thank you for that. Otherwise, just remains for me to wish you all a very safe journey home, to say thank you very much for coming and thank you for listening. And can we just finish with a show of appreciation for our panel this afternoon? Thank you very much.